Okay, this is episode one, season one of my new format. And of course, I'm quite random. I do want to welcome all of the Yakkers to Yappity Yak. I'm your host, Myrie. The Yappity Yak is proudly sponsored by Felicity Mall. Be sure to check out felicitymall.com where you'll find delightful selections of beauty products and more. Now, to the consideration of the day. We're talking about 1844, New York City. Now, even with that date, there will be some people that will instantly know what I'm looking at. But in 1844, in New York City, skilled labor, that means plumbers, electricians, people like that, not factory workers, and not businessmen or CEOs. Skilled labored workers work 6 days a week. They got Sunday off. Because, you know, yeah, that's the way it was back then. Not going to bring it up. Now, here's the thing. They worked, they averaged 11.4 hours a day. That's a whole day. Their pay was 32 cents a day. That's 2 cents an hour. A newspaper costs 2 cents. That's an hour's worth of labor to purchase a newspaper. There is not a single one of us that has seen that at all in our lifetime. So, on Saturday, 1844, April the 13th, a newspaper in the city of New York called The Sun, early in the morning, put out their regular newspaper, 2 cents, on their way to work, everybody bought one that could afford one. Because there's another thing about 1844. There were no telephones. If you needed to exchange information, a telegraph office was your only choice. There was no radios. Radios didn't come until years later. So they go about their day normally. And the newspaper had sold, you know, the standard amount of newspapers that they would sell. Now this next extra, which was published later that day at 10 a.m., is very puzzling because it could have been done for the sake of, hey, listen, we got some extra bills coming in this month. We need to sell a few more papers. Grab the most impressive story you can. Get it on the press. Get it in the streets. We need the money now. Because, kind of like they would do that today. So, I start reading this story. And now, some of you have known this story from day one. But I haven't. Basically because I'll tell you later. So it's Saturday morning, April the 13th, 10 a.m. and extra paper is published. And newsboys all over the city of New York are screaming, barking out to everybody, extra, extra, new flying machine crosses the Atlantic in 3 days. Extra, extra. Earth is now subdued by science. Read all about it. And they're going through the streets constantly doing that. So, of course, people are dropping their 2 cents for that extra paper. So now, the population of New York City has spent 2 hours worth of labor just to read information about what's going on. And today, I know we get cranky when a website asks for donations, let alone try and charge us for it. So we've got the flying machine crossing the Atlantic Ocean in 3 days. This story was amazing. People Sunday were talking about it in church. The ones who didn't go to church were talking about it at home. Mothers and fathers were gathering the family together and reading this story to them. And now this was a big story to read. It covered the whole front page. The story was huge. It went into detail. And now it mentioned people in this story that were extremely respectable people. And of course, I'm going to include a link where you can find the actual news report at. But now, in the story, it says that the flying machine was piloted by Monk Mason. So I'm assuming they mean Thomas Monk Mason. He was a musician, an author, and a poet. He did fly in a balloon that he wrote about from England to, I think it was because I was reading, oh my God, trying to find the truth about this story. I had to read constantly for 3 days. And I could have crossed the Atlantic in that time. At the time of this story, Monk Mason would have been 41 years old, or turning 41 years old. Now, his notable achievements was flute player, writer, and a balloon aeronaut. Now, next to him was Mr. Robert Holland. Now, they're likely referring to Robert W. Holland, born in 1792, died in 1866. He was an American politician and judge from Maryland. The Robert Holland that everybody online says that they were referring to, which was an aeronaut, wasn't even born until 1974. So the second Robert Holland that they could have been referring to was a politician, an American politician and judge, to where Monk Mason, he was definitely European. Now, the other person, William Samuel Hansen. They referred to as Mr. Hansen, but we can assume that they were referring to William Samuel Hansen, born in 1812 and died in 1888. He was a British-born aviation pioneer, engineer, and inventor. He is best known for his work on the aerial steam carriage in 1843 alongside John Stringfellow. Well, now, that's where this story picks up steam at. Because they are talking about a balloon, and now this is in the news report. They're talking about a balloon which was able to cross the Atlantic into Charleston, North Carolina, in 3 hours from the UK. However, Samuel Hansen was working on a steam-fueled airplane, basically. That's what he was working at. He was working on an airplane, not a balloon. There was no balloon involved in this. The problem he had with this, and he did patent it, and he patented it in 1843, just a year before this story hit the newspapers in New York City. And that could be where they picked up that name from, was from the aerial patent that he had filed. And it might have taken a year, if he had filed it in London, it might have taken a year to make it to America. Because, you know, we had horse and buggy back then. Wooden ships. And balloons. In fact, it would be almost 100 years before the hot air balloon tragedy that hit the Hindenburg. It would be almost 100 years. Not quite. Like 70 or something years before the Hindenburg went down. Now, this story is still absolutely amazing. No matter what comes out of it, it's still, the ending of this story is absolutely, absolutely amazing. Now, some of the others mentioned in the story is Mr. Harrison Answorth, likely referring to William Harrison Answorth, born February 1805 and died January 1882. Now, he was an English historical novelist born at King Street, Manchester. A name that would have been admired by the educated in New York City. Yes. However, he was a novelist. So basically what this news report was pretty much like a very logical combination of multiple things that existed already in the time period, which is a very good thing to do. Because let's face it, if we didn't somehow put bucket and water together, we'd still be crawling around in the dirt. Sometimes the slowing of progress has to do with what the right hand knows about the left hand, and what the left hand knows about the right hand. So I kind of admire this story. This story was basically a step forward to the future we're living in now. Now, the story starts off, Sun office, April 13th, 10 o'clock a.m. Astounding news by Express by a Norfolk. The Atlantic crossed in 3 days. Signal triumph of Mr. Monk Mason's flying machine. Arrival at Sullivan's Island near Charleston, South Carolina. And I apologize, I said North Carolina earlier. Of Mr. Mason, Mr. Robert Holland, Mr. Henson, Mr. Harrison Answorth, and 4 others, and the, and it says MM, so I had to rack my brains, like, oh, mid-morning. That was actually a time of day at one time. Steering balloon, Victoria, and the balloon had the name Victoria. After a passage of 75 hours from land to land, full particulars of the voyage, and it goes on to a full-page description of everything, including logical about how the steering mechanism was created, how the propulsion mechanism worked, what the balloon itself was made of, which included silk and some other materials. And I mean, if I sat here and read them to you, this would be a 6-hour podcast. And plus, when I read, it is not party. Then it was a picture of a balloon with what appears to be a netted suspension of a apparatus with a paddle in the back, like a boat would have. I don't know what those are called. And then with a, I'm going to call it a whirly-dig, but in the front of it, it had like a spiral contraption added to it to move the air. And that was considered futuristic technology. Now, this is called, and you need to do the research yourself, because the issue I have is with the research. This is called The Balloon Hoax by Edgar Allan Poe. Now, when I was in grade school, Edgar Allan Poe was one of my favorites, alongside Bela Lugosi, Vincent Price, and a few others. But I did not get caught at the library checking out the works of Poe, the complete works of Poe, although half of it I didn't understand. Now, going through this, the guided rope remedies of the difficulty in the simplest manner conceivable. It is merely a very long rope which suffered to trail from the car, and the effect of which is to prevent the balloon from changing its level in any material degree. That's how detailed this report got. It includes the journal of the captain as he crossed, or the pilot. The amazing thing about this is, I looked at it, and at first I'm like, oh, that's cool. Wait, by Poe? And now, you can, I'm looking for all of the articles. I want to find the original article. It turns out there's only two articles, or two of those papers in print left. And those two papers, one of them, there is a small thumbnail available online because a copy of this paper was faxed, and that is the only copy that made it out of the collection. However, the collection, and I'm sorry, I have to go over my notes here because basically I got really deep into this. Oop, missed it. And that was not the collection I was looking for. There it is. That you can find the full story as it was printed at the Works of Poe. And it's eapoe.org/works/tales/ballhxa.htm, which would stand for balloon hoax. And it goes through the whole story and it gives you everything that I told you and tons more. But the Baltimore Poe did full research on it and they were searching for the original story. And they were only able to find two physical copies of those records in existence. I'm sorry. This, you know what, this does not, let me add a flag here. Okay, here it is. There appears to be only two copies of the original printing, one in the American Antiquarian Society and the other in the Gimbel Poe collection of the Free Library of Philadelphia. The Gimbel copy suffers from some notable water staining. A photostatic copy may also be found in the Poe collection of HRCL, University of Texas at Austin. A piecemeal, which is a fax, of this article was printed by Charles S. Brigham, I apologize, Poe's Balloon Hoax, the American Book Collective, Volume 1, and it goes on to tell you where you can find it. So that's where you would find. So if you live in Austin, Texas, please see if you can get a gander at that article and take some pictures. Because in all the articles, I did not find an author. And in the reprieve of the article, first of all, the article was fake. Now, when it was presented to me, it was presented to me like War of the Worlds. Even though the title of the news report said balloon hoax, people still believed it. No, the title did not say balloon hoax. That's what they're saying now. That is not what they said in 1844. In 1844, it was passed off as a very real, very tangible thing that did happen. And without even telephones or radio, it's not going to be that easy to validate something back then. But everybody says they know for sure that Edgar Allan Poe wrote this. I'm like, okay, where's the proof? I can't find anything other than referring to other people's works. Well, show me the proof that they found that proved that Poe did it. Still nothing. Finally, on Wikipedia, I did find a small passage on Wikipedia that came from Edgar Allan Poe himself. However, they don't quote where this came from. They just give the references at the bottom that they use for everything. But they do not quote where Poe's words came from. And it says, Poe himself describes the enthusiasm his story had aroused. He writes that the Sun Building was besieged by people wanting copies of the newspaper. I never witnessed more intense excitement to get possession of a newspaper, he wrote. The story's impact reflects the period's infatuation with progress. Poe added realistic elements, discussing at length the balloon's design and propulsion system in believable detail. He used of real people, including William Harrison Answorth. He did not say William Harrison Answorth. The article says Harrison's Answorth. Also lent credence to the story. The character, Monk Mason, was not a real person, though he was based heavily on Thomas Monk Mason. So, neither one of them were real people. The story borrowed heavily from Mason's 1836 book, Account of the Late Aeronautical Expedition from London to Weilburg. And they do not cite the references that came from. So if anybody out there could actually know why they say that the balloon hoax was the work of Edgar Allan Poe, I would like to know. But the one amazing thing about this story, about the newsprint, and about how the people reacted during a time period where one penny was a full hour's wage for a tradesman. And less than a penny was a full hour's wage for a factory worker, a low-level worker. Then you have to ask, how amazing is that? How much did the people of 1844 want to see a future of amazement? Here's what that type of travel would have given the people of 1844. They could have traveled from New York to California without having to worry about road robberies, without having to worry about animal attacks, without having to worry about supplies. Because if it could make it there in 3 days, it could probably make it, we'll say, I'm thinking 5 days from New York to California, because it would have to go around a lot of mountains, or over a lot of mountains that would not be comfortable. So you need 5 days worth of provisions for a travel from New York to California, to where at the time you needed months worth of provisions to get from one point to the other. And then you had to hope that when you stopped somewhere to purchase provisions, you just plain didn't get robbed. So it was looking at a safe, convenient, healthy future. And they got so excited and their souls became so elated that they probably glowed at the time. This was a time period where you could probably just look over New York City from a distance and see a very faint glow of all the happiness going on in the city for our future, for what we have today. Our ancestors wanted us to be safe and comfortable and happy. All of us. Even though they had a few social issues back then. We're still working on that. But to see people from our past just wishing us so much and giving so much so that we can have an airplane to travel in, except for American Airlines. But we now have the blessing of highways in the sky, just as they fantasized back in 1844. We have got a lot of things that they didn't have in 1844. In 1844, the general population, the streets were still buggies and horses. That's pretty much what I have to say about that particular one. Do your research. The links will be in the description. I love you. Have an amazing day. Don't forget to subscribe, not because there's anything great about my work or anything I do, because this ain't actually work. This is what I do on a regular basis. This is my hobby. Like, really? Wow, that's pretty amazing. Show me where I can find the information on that. To see that it's real. I think that was left over from Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, and a Tooth Fairy. So, have an amazing present time now. And enjoy the future that's coming. It's a wonderful world out here. And thanks to the people that did a lot of mess ups at one time, created a lot of tragedy, and did a lot of bad things, we can now sit back and decide for ourselves how we want our society to go. We no longer have to fight to have a refrigerator in our home. Well, we do, but not like they did. We no longer have to walk through horse poop to get to a taxi. That's pretty much like that. We no longer have to light candles to light up our homes at night. And as far as the weather conditions go, you know what? On a heat wave, we have an AC. Did you know the year that that came out in 1943, the winter was so harsh that year that it canceled out Indian summer. And if you don't know what Indian summer is, Google it. So then in 1944, the summer was pretty well dry. So there was some definite things going on there. And the people got happy because they saw a future in the air. Instead of sitting around screaming about what was going wrong. During Indian summer, it was reported, 1943, which would have been October, there was a blanket of snow on the ground. After you Google Indian summer, you'll understand it completely. If you know what Indian summer is, you already know what I'm talking about. So, Saturday, April the 15th, 1844. People actually sent out energy so that you could listen to this podcast or not listen to it. But if you made it this far, you gotta listen to it because this is my goodbye speech. I love you. Take care. Keep yakking. Don't forget to follow. Like if you want to, but follow because I might hit something that would interest you, and I might hit something that, like, you know, motivates you. And then again, you might go for the next 5 years, and I won't say a word that you will even care about one way or the other. But follow anyway. And if you want to hear something or you want me to look up something, message me with it. I will look into it. It might take a little longer than you expect, but I will do it. And since this is the first one, I haven't decided exactly what type of format I'm going to use to present my stories. And I really haven't decided really what category they belong in. But I am working on that. Keep yakking, guys.